Hello, everyone. This is Glenda. Welcome to the blessings of Christ today. Of course, he blesses us every day if we just call upon him, ask him, and cultivate a regular prayer life. It's one of the best habits you can have. Of course, it needs to be better than just a habit, but it's okay if it's just a habit. You know, praying every day keeps you connected to the one who created you and to the love of others that come to you, because we're all connected through that divine person, the divine self of all creation. So, Caroline, thank you for being here and opening our call today. I love that I'm here, and I'm going to get it started. I think we announced it last week, or Nancy announced that she's got a brand new baby boy, and there are two gentlemen in that family that are pretty ecstatic today. One is Grandpa, and the other is the one who's having his very first Father's Day. So I send special blessings to them because I can't be there. I'm with my larger family, and I wish a wonderful celebration, acknowledgement, and appreciation to all of our fathers in the congregation. You, well, all of us, collectively speaking, wouldn't be here without you. And so we send you our deepest love and respect this day, and hope that you can find some special acknowledgement and pleasure just to wrap your life today in love and joy. And thank you, Carolyn, again, for being here. And I think she's going to watch for anyone. It's a real necessity to get online, but we're going to keep it pretty much to the point. I have a wonderful, wonderful presentation for you today. I guarantee you, you're going to love it. I'm going to do the reading since I wasn't able to get this started with Carolyn in time. And, of course, Nancy can't be here. It's one of my favorite passages because I just love the way he includes nature and animals and all manner of creatures in this symphony of life that we all are part of. And, you know, it's understandable that we focus upon our own species, our brothers and sisters of humanity. But there's a lot of us that are pretty worried about the rest of this planet, our, you know, our loved ones in nature, not just our pets, but the ones that still roam the forests, the hills and the valleys, wild, and being the cofactor of life that is so necessary. If we didn't have all of the cofactors of life, this little planet, beautiful as it is, would probably just dry up and blow away. I imagine that's what happened once upon a time to Mars and other planets in the universe that we haven't tracked down. It can happen. You know, it's so important that when life emerges, almost instantly, it diversifies. And then the rest of the struggle in the existence of life is to reunify and take care of one another. We're going back and forth on this all the time, and I just love it when you have special opportunities to be mindful about how important we, every species, down to the little flea, is important. You probably heard my comments in earlier presentations about how I have had special communications with little flies, baby flies. There were some baby flies in my sink 2 or 3 days ago, and I thought at first they were just a flea. So when I got my magnifying glass and I put over every leg, wing, and tentacle that belongs to an adult fly was there, and I could barely see it. So it was the most amazing creation. And once upon a time, I was just meditating on the heavens. It was not quite dark yet, but dark enough you could begin to see a few stars. And this little flea landed on my arm. And I had this poetic thought of, wow, I wonder what that little guy is looking at. And I thought at first, well, it may be looking at me to see if I'm comfortable with him on my arm. Because, you know, they are cautious when they're around another species. But I noticed to the degree that I could observe him turning, he was looking, or it was looking up at the heaven also. And it just struck me that the difference between that little flea and me is nothing compared to how majestic the whole universe is, the whole of creation. And he and I are probably closer in similitudes than the great planets of our solar system are. And it was a humbling, but a glorious moment just to think about. And then I went on to think, you know, if he wasn't here, I keep saying he, maybe it was the boy flea. I don't know. But if, you know, I kind of avoid the pronoun it because it's not very special. So we've got to work out some of this nomenclature of our language and update it, because think, as it once was said by the cowboys, things are a-changing every day. Yes, they are. So, you're going to love this passage, but here's why I selected it. We began on a special continuity for maybe 2, 3, or even 4 weeks on the power of the Sacred Heart. It doesn't always feel like a temple we're entering, but it sure is more connected to the universe than our physical heart is. You know, I'd like to distinguish what I'm talking about. But really, your spiritual heart was the creator of your physical heart. And it was noticeable in ultrasounds right after the first day of conception. It's been there all of your life. And it will be there to the end of your life and beyond. It's what will carry your love, your memories, and your loving connections forward into existence. So this day is for all of you, every part of you, your body, mind, heart, sacred heart, and eternal soul. We're all going to focus in on today. We're going to take it to the next step. And kind of ironically, I'm going to use a quote Yeshua has about elephants and nature, because they're part of it too. It's not just the soul of humanity, but we're all part of it. And I also want to tie it in with a running thread that we keep touching back in, because it's so important to understanding his message. I would say probably the most referred to talent, skill, focus, attribute, whatever we might call it, to human life and our relationship to our Creator is this one word, faith. It's where before every miracle we know that he performed, including the multiplication of fishes, including the miracles on the streets of, you know, the urban centers he visited. And he would first look up He would always look up, and then he would pronounce some affirmation of faith. Faith, and then he would seal the blessing when it was done. He would return to that one word, faith, and say to the recipient, your faith has made you whole. Now, go forward and live in your faith. And this was, he encouraged the apostles to contemplate, appreciate, dwell on, and apply the power of faith to everything they did. Everything. And an interesting commission of faith is this, when he commissioned them to go to the world and teach the good news. He sent them out to the world with nothing but sandals, a skin of water, a little knapsack on their back, and that was it. They went out to a world where they had no friends, probably no, maybe they might start at one where there was family just to shore up their confidence. You know, that's possible, and we can go with that. But he didn't send them out in order first to connect with the ones who trust you, that you trust, etc., and then go to the next level, and then go to the next level. He just sent it out to the world. Thomas went to India. He knew no one there. Peter went to Rome, full of enemies. And yet, according to their testimonies, every day they had food and a place to sleep. So they went to actually demonstrate the power of faith, develop their understanding of faith, teach the power of faith. Because really, there wasn't anything else to go on. Just think about it for a minute. Now, sometimes we attribute faith to being similar or the same as belief. And Yeshua referred to the power of belief many times in his teaching, but he never confused it with faith. He never allied it to faith. Belief is belief and faith is faith. So let's take a look at this difference, because it's going to have a lot to do with what we study today. Belief, okay, no, I roll back on that. Let's go back to where your faith is pure and holy. And that is between the worlds you live, the Sacred Heart, where you live not in the outer world, but you live within the world from which you were created. This is what Yeshua was teaching the apostles. They were looking for, well, where's the kingdom of heaven? Where are we going to be? In heavenly space, where will we find it? And he said, it's within you. Within you. Now, he didn't limit that to in your body. It could be in the you, that the soul that is immortal. He didn't say what dimension of you he was talking about, but considering that he always came from an orientation to unity, especially summarizing the two remaining commandments he left for us, to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. That is to be in union with God. And to love your neighbors as yourself. Again, there's unity. In everything he taught, he could take one fish and multiply it into the many fish. he could take one tree and make it abundant so that from that one tree, it would multiply and heal all the fig trees of the vineyard, of the orchard. In the case of fruit, it's orchard. But he also talked about in relation to the vine as well. I'll try not to dwell on everything because I want to get to the point. But the fact is, you are unified. All parts of your being are unified in the Sacred Heart. And that's why we are studying carefully the different intelligences that the heart offers to us. The first of them being the intelligence of unity. That's not an accident that it would be the first, because that's where the spiral of life that spirals around and out into greater and greater space begins. It begins in the union we have with God, the one who created us and who will receive us eternally into that place. So this is we want to look at this place of unity where, pardon me, just a moment. We want to tie it all in with unity because that's where our power is. Our power to be effective with one another. I apologize. I had a little bit of a coughing challenge there. I didn't want to burden you with it. So, He referred to faith as that which brings us into union. Belief almost always has to do with some confidence we have in our ability to perform or understand, acquire, or prosper, or be in a loving relationship with our family, our community. In other words, belief is almost always primarily directed toward our capacity for having a better life in the world and accomplishing more in the world and even creating greater health to the degree that we're focusing on our body and our health. Now, faith is looking inward. It's holding our position over time, way over time, past all manner of challenge. Faith endures, and faith draws upon our greater power to succeed in ways that it counts over long duration of time. Faith that doesn't ask questions, that doesn't turn back around and say, well, I must have done it wrong. I must have asked for the wrong thing. No, no, not at all. You just have to be persistent. I am going to give you, I love to give you examples of how to walk in the world with his teaching, because he really came here to do that. That's what he wanted us to walk our faith and to walk our belief as well, of course, and to be in union with others, to build a common understanding, a common functionality and performance and achievement. So he always gave parables in the world, whether it came from nature or one another or just the way things work. But see, here's what I want to say. The first time I ever saw the Grand Canyon, I think I was about 14 years old. My family we constantly, every summer, went to Colorado, various places, but we stepped a little outside of our predictable box and we went to Arizona. my mom and dad, especially my dad, wanted to see the Grand Canyon at least once in his life. And we were there on the South Rim and just staggering in awe with how big it was and how there's no way we could cross that. We'd have to go all the way around it to arrive on the North Rim. And I just asked my dad, and I said, "Daddy, what created this?" And he said, "Well, ultimately God created it, but if you want to get down to mechanics and specifics, look down to the base of that canyon." And he said, "There's the Colorado River." And I said, "Yeah, I read that on the tour map." And I said, "What about it?" And he said, "That river created the whole thing." I went, "What? What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, it took a long time, million years or more. We can see all the different layers on the side of the Grand Canyon." And I said, "How did it do it? Water flows in our backyard and it doesn't do anything other than water the backyard." I said, "Did that water have more strength?" And he said, "No, it just persisted." Persistence is actually the power of accomplishment. And persistence does not allow doubt in. It doesn't allow second thoughts in. Revisionist ideas. Revisionist anything. Faith is your rock. Now, Yeshua knew that Peter, who was originally Simon, was about the stubbornest man on earth. And once he made his mind up about something, you aren't going to turn him around. So Yeshua decided to do a turnaround on his character and create something that would allow him to be the durable and enduring force of the spiritual movement that would have to follow. And so he renamed him Peter, which means the rock. He knew that Peter was going to be firm in whatever he had adapted himself to witness, believe, and understand. And you weren't going to shake him. There was going to be no revisionist thinking around Peter. So, take one more break, everybody. I'm back. And Peter had a very interesting approach to his teaching. It was very simplistic. Take it or leave it. We don't talk about it. We don't negotiate it. Just take it or leave it. It's a matter of faith. And I'm going to tie that into something that I think is probably the only weakness in our Christian community and stand in the world and within the civilization of spirit, is we have overrated the power of belief and underrated the essence of faith. We have had in the past saints who emphasized the power of faith, and most of them were, they were declared to be extremists or traitors, heretics, and they lost their position of not completely out, but their position of influence. They were never referred to again because the church wanted to give people something to believe. Toward the middle of our church history, a lot of faith was lost. And through into the Middle Ages, a lot of faith was lost because of the emphasis on belief. Now, I'm going to give you a real example of a conversation I had with someone early on, and she was asking me a lot of very pointed questions. And she said, how did you know that this soul that appeared to you was actually Jesus? And I said, I went on faith. There's nothing else I could go on. I connected with this person, this soul, inside myself, inside my heart, my soul. I resonate, my soul resonated with his soul. And there was nothing but faith there. There wasn't any faith. And then she went, she says, well, how can you tell other people what to believe? And I began to see where this conversation was going. And I said, well, you tell me about your belief and your faith. And I said, do you have faith in God? And she says, well, I sure believe in him. And I said, do you have faith in him? And she says, well, I believe in him enough to pray. I believe in him enough to go to church on Sunday. I believe in him enough to read my Bible. And I came back to her and I said, do you have faith in him? And she says, what do you mean? And I said, once you pray, can you drop it and know that your prayer has been heard? Do you know that you're loved? Do you know that you're cared for? Do you know that you will be healed and you will be prospered? Do you know that? And the only thing she could say is, well, I believe it. And we went back and forth like this quite a bit. And then I remembered something from long ago, long, long ago, a conversation, a similar conversation I had with my first husband, Victor. Now, he was a lovely man, a wonderful man of integrity, but basically, he didn't want to really admit it, but he was basically an atheist. You couldn't get him to talk about God. But he came from an extreme aristocratic family. Like, we're talking, like, down the road at one time, royalty, you know. In living in New York City, in a very high position socially, a man of great integrity, and I was really worried. We were talking about having children at that time, and I was worried because I said, would you permit me to talk about God to our children and take them to church? Because I would not want to bring children into this world that cannot be united with God. Would you mind? He said, no. Our family has donated to the church through the ages. You know, we're charitable to the church. And I said, well, do you believe anything? He said, well, not really. But he said, I make a show of it, and I act respectful. And then later on, not too many years, like about 3 years later, his mother was had advanced cancer, and she was going to pass away in probably the next few weeks. And I said, Victor, I think we need to offer some prayers to her. And he said, well, where would I go? I don't even know where to go. And I took him, I looked up, the closest Episcopal church to us, because his family had contributed to the Episcopal church. And I met with the priest, and I told him the situation. He said, bring him on. We'll pray for him. We'll pray for the family. He may find his belief. You know, and the priest offered something that was very interesting to me, because I asked him, what is your faith? And he said, my faith is deep, but my faith is personal. What I express to the world are beliefs, because that's what we can connect with. And for the first time, I really did let go of my inner dialogue that one was one and one was another, because Yeshua also referred to belief. And, of course, most of all, faith. He knew the difference, but he also realized the importance of belief. So we honor them both, and sometimes belief is all as far as you could go in communicating your understanding with other people. So I don't want you to think that I'm denigrating the power of belief. I'm not, because it's a connecting link, and a very important connecting link, because in believing, we know that there's something to reach for, and sometimes something to reach beyond. And in faith, there's something to anchor ourselves within. And that faith is what's going to go the distance for you. That faith is what's going to hold up like the Colorado River until you have literally connected heaven and earth with yourself. And now I want to get to this reading. I'll leave you with that, because I think you'll carry it the next distance for yourself. And I want to leave you with this reading, because it's so beautiful and it says so much about the innocence of life. I was asking in a conversation once upon a time, and I asked him, I said, where is this place? We had been talking about the soul and the soul's place in life. I said, where is this place where I am? I was in a realm more ancient than my soul, and yet virginal within undreamed of potential because of the days I had spent with him and all the places he had taken me to. And Yeshua said that I was to learn that the void is inside everything. He had taught me about the void, and I just wondered, well, is it a place we go, or where is it, and what does it feel like? And he said, you, me, and all things are simultaneously inside and outside of the void. In other words, there's a part of us that was created to deal with the outer world, and a part of us that needs to rediscover the void from which we were created. And he went on to say, the void is a vacuum of nothingness between all physical particles and even between the inner world of subjective awareness and the outer world of objective reality. The void is the inner sanctuary of creation, where now and forever are of equal duration. He went on to add, there's more. To all things, there is an inner and an outer world. This is true of the cosmos, or of the least particle within it. It is true of a rosebud or a human soul. The inner and the outer worlds reveal themselves through different kinds of perception and different kinds of encounters. Between these two easily sensed extremes, there is yet another deeper inner world, which is invisible even to you. This invisible world is waiting to be discovered, begging to be revealed. This is a reality beyond the limits of your dream horizon. This is your true magnetic energy. The invisible inner world is both majestic and humble. It is shy and elusive, yet powerful as an ocean. At times, one may catch a glimpse of this world in dreams or imagination, or perhaps in moments of ecstasy, tenderness, or compassion. However, the most powerful connection in this realm is through sincere and devout prayer. Prayer occurs in the heart, but it can be facilitated with any words or activity that invokes your own true presence. Anyone or anything in its true presence is intrinsically connected with the divine. In this state, a natural equilibrium brings life into greater wholeness. Whether you understand it or even feel it. He goes on. Do not limit your experience of the world by what you can see and touch with your physical senses or think about in your mind. These three dimensions of reality, outer, inner, and invisible, are known in different ways. The outer world is essentially recognized because of resistive patterns of data. I'll insert right there, okay, part of why you have touched a leaf is you could feel it. Okay, well, that feeling was produced by the fact that a leaf has a boundary and little tentacles on the surface or texture, and you have receptors on your skin. That's what he means by different, feelings and perceptions by resistance. So as you encounter the boundary of something, whether it's just reaching your hand outside from a warm room in the winter through a window you crack open, that's still a temperature boundary and a requirement of adjustment so that you're actually feeling the difference in patterns of data. Thoughts, feelings, intentions, and attitudes reveal our subjective world, he continued on to say. The deep inner world is only known by the humility we feel in the presence of a force that calls you into life, moves you through life, and carries you beyond. For example, now here's the example I promised you. For example, the outer world of an elephant is the forest, the fields of grass, the rivers with lush, muddy banks, and bright starry nights. The subjective world is made up of feelings and thoughts about all that is, to which there are qualities of life, memories, social connections, history, and a sense of belonging to the herd and the ancestors of the herd. Beyond that, there's a deep inner world, invisible even to the elephant. This is the power of its place in the kingdom. Through a sense of its own presence in the kingdom and the presence of nature and natural elements, the elephant will be drawn mysteriously to where the rains have come. Perhaps he will be carried away mysteriously to where the hunters are, and then away from them, and then beyond lights to where the elephant in its glory may serve eternity or reemerge again into creation. Reverent connection with the deep inner world is the humility of a soul seeking to know its nobility, and the nobility of the soul seeking to express its faith in the great unknown. The inner world, a vacuum, technically speaking, for there is neither time nor space there. The inner world is much more ancient than either the subjective world of thought or the objective world of manifestation. At the heart of the inner world is the seed of all beginnings. Perhaps that's why he used the parable of the mustard seed, that if you have faith so much as the size of a mustard seed, you can call to the mountain and it will come. But I'll finish that sentence from this quote. It is the seed of all beginning, ever able to newly begin from this timeless potential. This is the place where love as pure being is replicated and carried forth to appear in the worlds of thought and manifestation. So they all work together. At the beginning of all existence, there was a void. And you can find this in the book of John. You can find it in the book of Genesis. And you can find it in many other sacred texts of our spiritual history. Just looking for the right word that didn't prejudice anything. Because we have always wanted to know where we came from. Yeah, little kids ask that of mommy. And she doesn't get at first down to the real basics. She'll come up with something. God created you. Mom and daddy prayed to receive you. And then you were brought into our life. You know, she'll use whatever's right for your level of understanding. But she'll come up with some kind of answer. And the fact is, you wanted to know. And you won't stop until you find out. And faith is the way you will find out that there's something more than even what you think about. There's something more than even what you believe. There's something more than even what you feel. It's that river of connection with God in eternity that never stops. That is forever. It is love without end. So, I'll leave you with that, and let's see. Oh, actually, I've got this quote from Genesis here. I thought you might like to hear that. And the earth was without form and void. There's the most people don't think of what I just was speaking about, the true absolute void. They think about it like, well, where there wasn't any substance, you know, things haven't been created. It was just raw potential. And what physics would call space-time. You know, they're not really into void yet. They're calling the emptiness of creation, manifest creation, as space-time. And, you know, that's a step beyond where Albert Einstein was, because he declared and summarized in mathematics the fact that space and time create energy, and thus there is matter. So he was still dealing with diversified elements. But as quantum physics moves on, they realize there's a point at which there are no diversified elements, but they can't get totally into the void because there's no mathematics there. I mean, let's face it, if it's a total true void, there's no 1, 2, 3, there's no multiples, there's no distance, and we simply surrender into it and know it as the soul of our being. It only can be approached with faith. It cannot be described. It cannot be measured. It is faith. And that's what caused our, well, receivership of the faith of Yeshua. He lived in faith. He taught in faith. He died in faith. He resurrected in faith. And there was no dimension. And to this day, there is no place he cannot be at the same time. This is how he can be with you and me at the same time, or we can be praying and present with the Middle Eastern conflict and be there in our prayers. We can be there in the troubled plains of nature that are about to go extinct, but they're not extinct for us because we're outside of space and time, and we know they will all be remembered and revived. And as a matter of fact, I've been having some wonderful discoveries online about some species, either plant or animal, that were actually classified as extinct that are now coming back. And how could they be with nothing to create from? They're recreating from basic serpents, basic substance of existence applied to memory of them. They were here once upon a time. They're still here. And by their faith and our faith, here they come. And I think this is why Yeshua said that the first to be raised at the fulfillment will be the dead. And I think it's because faith will ignite everything. The creation of heaven on earth, the healing of souls, the development of a true civilization that is governed by love and peace. This is how he could raise the dead, because he was there in faith. And through faith, he could connect totally with the perfect image of anyone, himself, Lazarus, anyone, in his perfection of memory. He will carry you through the in-between worlds into the ultimate reality. And back here, if it's important for you to be back here. The early apostles knew about reincarnation because they asked him about it was so-and-so, such-and-such. And he would say, "No, that was Peter, or somebody else." He would just say, "No." I mean, it was just coffee table talk to him. It was the way life worked to him, and it wasn't a big deal, but it was filtered out. There's a few traces of it in. If you're interested, write me on your Ask a Blessing. And I'll send you a link. I'll let you know where it is. But there are some records of it being discussed with the apostles. But it was taken out because, and I think even Yeshua approved of it being removed to a large degree. Because in the absence of faith, people wouldn't know what it means. They would think of it in ways of, well, you come back to mend to pay karma. You come back to pay a debt. You come back to evolve. You come back to go to learn something you didn't learn last time. It has nothing to do with that. You come back by faith. By faith. And faith is the place we need to really understand for our prayers to work, our blessings to wrap us in faith. Faith of our ancestors, faith of God, faith of Yeshua for us. In giving his blessing to us, he wraps us in his faith that we may receive whenever our faith is open to receive. In other words, you receive from the void. And your intelligence is centered around the void. And that's not time-space. That's God. That is God that inhabits that, because God is not substance. God is the source of all creation, distributed through that creation as his spirit, and taken flesh to be seen as his son, and eventually by more and more children who will come of age in understanding their relationship in faith, no less than the elephant does. You know, I learn so much sometimes from my animal friends and even my plants, because sometimes they're just growing on faith and thin air because I forgot to water them for the last month, and they're still just as vibrant as they can be. What faith can do just never ceases to amaze me and stop me in my steps. And so I hope I've impressed this on you in listening to this, because in learning about the higher intelligence of the heart, what we're doing is kind of a cowboy, cowgirl, cow person roundup. We're surrounding the center of our faith with our grasp of understanding in all these different ways. To some degree, we understand unity. We're not all the way there. We couldn't be, because it's beyond our scope. To some degree, yes, in our experience of life, we understand love, but we're growing in our understanding, which assists us in growing in life. But see, as we go through these dimensions of understanding recovered and regained, we are stalking this center of creation, which is where we unite with God, from which God created us. We're there. And from there, an even more wonderful place to live shall be created. So, I was really actually knowing this is going to be a little bit of a long presentation, so I didn't intend to set us up with a long Q&A session, because we're kind of running toward the end of time in the chronological sense, but we are forever in the grand time of uniting with one another in thought, love, life, respect, growth, learning, justice, kindness, in all of these great features that we are holding to ourselves and growing into. And I do like to keep everything, every time, reality focused, because I know that's where you're gonna go to find your lessons, your epiphanies, and your stumbling blocks. So I hope that helped. And let's come back now to just relaxing, being together, and enjoying our time together. I want you to take, first of all, just a really deep breath. Fill your lungs completely as far as you can and spreading the sides out. And hold it for just 2 or 3 seconds. It doesn't have to be long, don't strain yourself, but enough to be conscious of that breath. See, that's the key. I want you to be appreciative, grateful for that breath, and hold it long enough to see it infusing you with more life. You started your life with a breath. And that one breath has taken you everywhere else you've gone in life. So let's do it again. Let's take another deep breath. This one's still towards your lungs. Press down your diaphragm, spread your ribs, and hold that breath. And say thank you to God, to life, to everything, that you are the love that you are here in the midst of all of this incredible experience to behold and learn from. Now I want you to exhale slowly, because in exhaling slowly, you're blessing that breath that you're sending out to life. I read something very, very interesting on quantum physics, the wisdom that pushes things as far as they can go. And one of the great scientists in our history, Richard Feynman, was giving a lecture. He was a fabulous teacher, no longer with us in the physical. I'm sure he's here in the spiritual. But he gave a presentation to his class, and he said that one atom you exhale in faster than any time can measure can be on the other side of our planet, inhaled by a new baby. Or inhaled, actually, by a little animal that's going to make it part of its life. And he said, every breath you receive is a dispersal of atoms, and they go everywhere to create lots in another life form, in another context. And I thought, oh my goodness. And he said, then every atom you inhale will bring you a new understanding that you can create with. And he said, this is actually very, very important for the perpetuation of life. And of course, by that point, I was glued. I was absolutely glued to this lecture because I wanted to hear more. And he said, if all you got back was your own atom, well, there's a limit to how many times it can be replicated in the same context. You wouldn't have a very long life if all you got back was yourself. He said, you have to get something new that's going to give you a new idea, a new connection with life, a new orientation to life, or at the very least, a new building block for your body. And I went, oh my gosh, holy cow. So we are breathing life into one another with every breath. That's why I ask you to focus on it, to be grateful for what you get back. See, you're taking in what's going to revive your life in the next point of time. And you're giving back what's going to help another life form. It may be a human life form, may not be. We don't know because we don't control that. That's the plan of God. That's the greater plan that we're part of, that we contribute to by what? Our faith. And I'm finding, actually, that quantum physics is a little more connected to faith than a lot of belief systems are. Because so often, belief systems are based upon affirmations, doing good things, meditating about things, getting the right orientation, doing good work, and all that is wonderful. Yes, we praise it, we're grateful for it. But is that really what's going to revitalize the cells of your body and heal you? This is why Yeshua looked up and he invoked the power of faith before every miracle. He didn't teach his apostles to say affirmations. I'm sorry to disappoint you if you are overly subscribed to that. It's wonderful. It's wonderful because, you know, an affirmation is a little bit like praise and gratitude in advance, and it works. If you can see that you're going to get what you believe you're going to get and you actually can affirm it, that's power. That's true power, and it will help you get it. And that's a really blessed orientation toward life. But I'm not sure that's how the miracles come in. I'm pretty sure miracles come in from unknown places. And so I want you to be open to that. Because you come here to get a blessing. And you're going to get a blessing. And at the same time, I want you to pray. I want you to think upon that which you need. I want you to be open to receive everything you need and the power of God touching your life. So we'll just go on to our next breath, which is we're going to breathe up into our sinuses. We're going to just flood them with a new oxygen. Take it in. Take it in and hold it. If you got a little blockage up there, don't even think about that blockage. Just take it on all the way up in your mind. Because nothing can stop the power of your faith from going where it needs to go. It doesn't respond to blockage. Okay? Just take it on up. Hold it. A few seconds. Now, with that one, I want you to breathe out through your mouth. Just let go. Another part of the miracle is letting go. You got to just let go. If you hold on to things, the secret to getting everything you need is not to fuss over it. And this is, let go. God heard your prayer. He loves you. Get busy and do something that will move you in the direction of your fulfillment. Be in your certainty. Live in your faith. Letting go cures the worry wart in you. We think if we ask, if we visualize, and we pray some more, we can then just put our attention on worrying about everything. And it doesn't work. It actually closes the door. So let go. I want you to focus on this. Let's do it again. Take it all the way up into your sinuses. Hold it. Now I want you to just let go. It's done. If there's somebody in your life you're not getting along with. It's not working out. Say a prayer for them. Anytime, not necessarily now. Just when you're quiet and alone, say a prayer for them. Say a prayer to God. Pray for unity. Pray for resolve. Pray for understanding. Pray for forgiveness and grace. And then let go. Don't worry about it. And they may not work it out with you in the next 90 days or the next year or 10 years. You may not see a resolve, but somewhere you will. Yeshua talks about this in the last chapter of Love Without End. Because I was asking him about, well, what, you know, we don't always see love. Sometimes the people that stay the most on my mind are the ones who don't love me, and I don't particularly love them, but I got to worry about it. And he said, let them go. And I said, well, does that get the job done? And he said, it's the only thing that will get the job done, except for one more thing. And then he said, if love is not with you in regard to a particular idea or environment or person, it just means it's not your time to be together. Unity is what invokes love, presents love, allows you to have it for the betterment of life. And if it's not there, let go. Put your attention on what you do love, what loves you, and build upon every strand or potential or stream or thread of love in your life and give back to life. And when he told me that, I thought back to a lesson I learned, a couple of decades before that, when I had a vineyard, brand new vineyard, and we put our home on a field of sand, because that's where grapes grow best, is on sand, with clay down below. Well, there's another variety of life that loves sand, and that's grass burrs. Well, we had cleared the land completely where our home was, and I set out to plant Bermuda grass and had sprinklers all over the place. I was watering my Bermuda grass, but what was coming up were grass burrs. And I called the county agent. I said, can you give me something that'll kill these grass burrs? And he says, well, I can, but you won't like it. You know, we have herbicides that the professional farmers use. But he said, most people don't like that being sprayed around their home. He said, just give it a while. And your grass will probably take care of it. Well, he didn't give me what that meant or the real details of it. But there was an old rancher he came to congratulate me and on the vineyard and welcome us to the neighborhood. And I mentioned to him, yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to walking barefoot in this soil. And he said, oh, you got a problem with grass burrs? And, I said, I am. And he says, well, what you want to do is you don't want to use Roundup. And I said, well, I wasn't going to do that, but I was looking for some kind of herbicide. And he said, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't kill the grass burrs. Just feed the grass. And I said, what? He said, well, here's the fertilizer I use. And he wrote it down for me. I feed it to our Bermuda grass, and it grows 2 feet tall. Well, there's no place for those grass burrs to grow. And he said, nature takes care of itself if you let it. And He said, you, so when Yeshua told me this about, don't fret over it. If something isn't working, feed what is. You feed love and the negativity takes care of itself. And so I think that's a good place for us to just progress off into our blessing. But maybe one more thing, and I hope you've done it while I was talking on. I hope you stood up or you stretched your legs or your arms a little bit. You want, if you haven't done it, you want to do that, because to bring the old Texas rancher back in, there was a term they used for being all fixed and rigid. It's called stove up. And that was because every spring they had to take down the stove pipe that had collected soot over the winters. That's going back really to pioneer days. But, you know, they would dump the soot out, and they would walk and say, oh, we're all stove up now. Let's get that pipe down and shake it out. Well, sit down and not moving, your lymph system doesn't move at all. You don't move. It doesn't have a heart to pump it. And even your heart doesn't pump very much if you don't give it any movement or any incentive to get around and do a few things. It won't create enough energy. So we get stove up, all right? In other words, there's sludge. There's sludge in our veins, our arteries, and our lymphatic system. There's just sludge there. You can build up sludge in your kidney, your liver, and all of the various organs of elimination. And you want to move. No matter what physical condition you're in life, find a way to move. You got to get rid of that sludge, because the reason it's sludge is because it wasn't working for you and it didn't move you into action or success or healing. So you gotta keep that sludge moving. Otherwise, you'll be stove up. So, I'm sorry, but sometimes the Texas rancher just has to come out at me, because that's part of me walking on the pathway. Now, so do it. Stretch your legs, stretch your arms. Bend your back in all the ways that you can. And now, I want you just to be seated back in your chair. Once you've limbered up, got everything a little bit moving, maybe a lot moving, whatever you can do, I want you to sit down, and I want you to sit so that your torso is going up your spine, up into your head, and as the blessing unfolds, the energy from your head will pass through the crown of your head, up and back many times. And it's got to go down until it gets to your pelvic region, because in your pelvic region, it's going to start connecting you with the earth, because it's going to run a parallel. We want it to run a parallel line to the earth. All right, so you're seated in your chair, and from your hips, your leg will extend to your knees, parallel, a little higher level than the earth, but parallel. So we're patterning. That's actually what we're doing. We're setting our body up to pattern with the earth, you know, because it's sometimes through patterning that the greatest blessings are received. This is why we can be in a wonderful symphony or in praise and worship music, and not a word is said, but we're transformed. That was patterning. The harmony of sound, the harmony of voices in syncope. So we want to establish that pattern from your lap on outward to your knee, and then from your knee down to your ankle, which will travel vertically into the earth. It's going to go real deep. It's going to go at least as far as the first aquifer because it's the water underneath the earth that will magnetically draw the energy down. And the water will be harmonic with your blessing as well as your cleansing. So one of the things that's happening is we're drawing energy down from the cosmic realm, brand new energy for you from quantum space and space-time, and free-form energy down and through your head, your spine, into your pelvic region. And then it's going to flow parallel to the earth. Then it's going to go deep into the earth where it's cleansed. So the earth is going to cleanse from its subterranean water rivers. And then it's going to come back up to you through your legs and then bend to be parallel to you in this life of receiving, then up your spine and back out the top of your head to be dispersed into the quantum field or the atomic field or just the atmospheric field. It doesn't, we don't have to be accountable for how it's distributed, but I learned from a quantum physicist that it is distributed. And so the waiting, willing, and interested part of life will receive from you. And let's pray that it receives healing from you, learning from you, experiences that could value another soul, another life form from you. And we distribute and redistribute. We cleanse and then we re-cleanse. And the imprint of all of this happening is left on your body so that in the coming days, you will contact it, possibly through activity or possibly through prayer, meditation, or deep sleep, a creative act, a loving conversation, and something will just, you'll have that special aha. Oh my gosh, I got it. I realize now exactly how this works. It will come to you. Sometimes immediately, sometimes shortly, and sometimes ways down the road. But you will get it. And now we want to prepare and get you into that space. So I want you to seat yourself in a chair that you can conform in this pattern I described to you. And I'm going to pray to Yeshua because he said, always ask. And you can ask too, but I ask for everyone. Because we also ask for blessings to those who aren't here, to those who would ask if they knew to do so, who would ask with all their hearts if they could. So we ask for them too. Dear Yeshua, Son of God, the bringer of God to us, Lord of life, we thank you for being with us. And thank you for allowing us to realize that your presence is here and call upon it. We do call upon it because we love you and because we know that you are here to reunite us with our heavenly creator. We ask that you would hear the prayers of everyone and honor them all, each prayer in its time, its rightness to be received now or through eternity. We ask that you use us as receivers, even for those who can only receive from those who know to ask. But we can ask for them, and we do. We ask for peace on earth. We ask for restored abundance to everyone. We ask for love to be shared. We ask for our children to be held in peace, that they know their life was begun in love and peace. We ask that the hungry be fed, and that our scarcity of food problem be remedied immediately, that we will discover ways to get more food to more people, more medical care to more people. And we ask for the elderly and the infirm that they be cared for and loved in their final days on this earth for now, that they may have a sense of fulfillment in reunion with God, in reunion with their loved ones, and their own faith, that their faith will make them whole. We thank you for all that we are about to receive. Amen. Amen. And amen. Blessing givers, will you stand and join me now? Let us convey the blessing and power of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, I want you to rest at least 7 minutes, lying flat on either your bed, a mat on the floor, sofa, anything you can find is flat for at least 7 minutes, so that there is no relegation of status from one thing to another. Everything is part of everything that you are, and it shall all be blessed. Hold that in your thoughts, and don't think beyond that. Bye-bye for now, and I wish you a wonderful week. To our fathers, a wonderful rest of celebration day, and see you next week.